Hey, I'm Pastor Joel, and I just want to say thank you for downloading or streaming this message today. My prayer for you is that you're blessed by the content that you hear. As a church, our desire is to make disciples of Jesus, and we do that by helping people to trust and follow Him in every aspect of their daily life. So if this is something that blesses you, we just hope that you'll feel free to share this with others so that they might be encouraged and challenged by it as well.
Well, good evening from your 60 Seconds hosts. I'm Harry Reasoning.
And I'm Mike Wallface.
And tonight, we have a very special interview with Bigfoot. Yes, he really does exist.
But what about my great interview with that detective?
Well, does he at least have big feet?
He doesn't have big feet, but I'll tell you what. I was on my way to the Y, and I saw this guy fly by, lights blazing, sirens running straight into the Marriott. So, of course, I followed him.
Wow. Well, Mike, tell us what happened.
Nothing.
Nothing? Then why is this news?
Well, let's let the detective tell the story. Hi, I'm Mike from 60 Seconds, and I've got quite an interview with Detective Quillen here. Detective, what's going on?
Well, nothing at all, actually, but it was a mighty strange thing that occurred.
Well, you sure came in here in a hurry, lights ablazing and jumping into the hotel there, so something must be going
well,
on.
Well, yeah, you're right. I did. So what happened, we got this frantic call from a guest here at the motel that said that there was a homeless individual hiding in one of the rooms. And so I went in and I talked to the innkeeper, and they, you know, assured me that there was nothing to worry about. But he went on to tell me the strangest story.
What? Tell us more.
So, yeah, apparently there was this homeless individual that appeared to be hurt, that was laying on the side of the road over on Stone Drive, and had been laying there for 2 or 3 hours. And all of these people and all of these cars, probably hundreds of cars, drove by, and nobody stopped. Mm. Nobody stopped until this guy from California. Stopped his car, got out, helped this guy up, helped him into the car. He took him to the doctor just to make sure he was okay, you know, all that kind of good stuff. He paid for the doctor's visit. He then took him to lunch, paid for his lunch. He brought him over here and paid for his room for a month.
My goodness, here at the Marriott of all places.
Exactly, but that's not all. According to the innkeeper, this guy from California, in addition to paying for the room for a month, he left a credit card to cover any other additional expenses. You know, and I don't know what got into this guy from California, but I wish more people would get it.
My goodness. Can't agree with Detective Quillen any more than that. I'm Mike, one of your hosts from 60 Seconds. Back to the studio.
Wow, Mike. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Never, never.
Well, in our next segment, we'll tell you about how Bigfoot was discovered by a Kentucky basketball fan and has been signed as a graduate transfer for next season by John Calipari.
I love the fact that we get to have these skits and drama pieces because it helps us tell stories, right? And I love stories. I don't know if you like stories, but Jesus was a master storyteller. And some of the things that we've been taking and putting on display here on stage are just things that we've been bringing into modern day stories that Jesus told. And so if you have your Bibles this morning, turn to Luke chapter 10. We're going to start in verse 25 as we explore another story that Jesus told. And this is going to be a story that you are probably familiar with. Because Jesus uses it to help communicate some things about being a neighbor or being a servant and how we're supposed to love one another. And so in the story that we're going to read today, we're going to find that Jesus doesn't just tell stories, and we've been saying this throughout our series, Jesus doesn't just tell stories to entertain us. He doesn't just tell stories to fill space. He doesn't just tell stories in order to keep his audience engaged, but he really does it to teach us as his followers followers what it looks like to be actively following him in his kingdom. What are the things that we're supposed to learn and put into practice in our lives as we experience these stories? And so if you're taking notes this morning, either on our app or you enjoy writing some things down, here's the first thing I would tell you. The parables that Jesus gives us guide us to know him and how to live for him in our daily lives. That's the whole point behind these stories. And in the story we're going to look at this morning, Jesus is answering a specific question that's asked to him. And so he's really responding to a direct question from a guy. But at the same time, I think Jesus would be using this to teach those of us who are his followers, who are listening with different ears than just to get a response, how we're supposed to live out our faith and live out our lives as citizens of God's kingdom. And so here's what we're going to find as we jump into this story. Part of growing as a disciple of Jesus is learning to look beyond ourselves and see the needs of others. That as we grow in our discipleship, we learn to minister and to serve. That's part of what it looks like to follow Jesus. And so we're guided by Jesus through this story to understand more how to love people, how to find hope in Christ to serve his kingdom and to learn to minister to others. And so that's part of what a disciple looks like. Even if you've not grown up in church, you're probably going to be familiar with the story this morning. So I hope this is something that's familiar to you and can help you just connect with God in some unique ways. So here's what we find. Luke chapter 10, start in verse 25. It says, on one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law? Jesus replied, how do you read it? And he answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You've answered correctly, Jesus replied, do this and you will live. And so in the middle of this, here's the kind of the crux of what we're getting to, because the next thing that the guy asks Jesus, wanting to justify himself, he says, Jesus, then, who is my neighbor? And that really gets us to the big point of the story that Jesus is about to tell, because as this man, this lawyer, is testing Jesus, trying to find out what Jesus thinks about some specific things, he asked the question, hey, who's my neighbor? How are we supposed to keep the law? And really what this guy is looking for is, I know what the law says. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. You're supposed to give everything you have to God and his kingdom. And you're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself. Like these two things work in parallel with one another. In fact, Jesus had said that. Maybe this guy had been around Jesus a little bit as a law, as a Pharisee, Sadducee, one of the lawyers of the people of Israel, that he had heard Jesus say this exact same thing before. He's taking the Old Testament teaching from Deuteronomy and he's bringing it into modern day context. And so he goes, listen, we're supposed to love God with all we have. We're supposed to love our neighbors as ourselves. That's what I believe the law says. And so Jesus goes, great, then go do that. But then he asks that follow-up question. Okay, then who's my neighbor? Who am I supposed to do that for? In other words, what is, if I know the law, if I know what God requires, what's the least I can do to be obedient to the law? Let's narrow this down to who is my neighbor. And he's expecting Jesus to say, well, it's people like you. It's people really close in proximity to you. It's at the very most your Jewish counterparts. These are your neighbors, your Jewish people, the people that you would identify with and that you would hang out with, the people of your nationality, that's your neighbor. Everybody else, you don't really have to worry about them so much. That's what the guy's expecting Jesus or hoping Jesus will say. But here's how Jesus responds. He tells a story. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. And a priest happened to be going down the same road. And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and whined. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expenses you may have." Now, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? And the expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." And Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Right now, for context, the road from Jerusalem to Jericho was a treacherous place. It was full of high cliffs. There were places for people to hide behind rocks. It was a desert kind of area. And so you would walk down this road, and this stretch of road was known by the people who lived there to be a very dangerous place. This thing that Jesus is talking about, whether he's making it up or basing it on actual events, it could be either one, because they would identify and go, "Well, that makes sense. We know that happens all the time. People get beat up there. People get mugged there. People get taken advantage of there. That's a dangerous place to travel through." So when Jesus tells these things, he's helping them connect to something that they would have known about. And so he says, this man gets beaten up, robbed, and left for dead. And oh, by the way, they strip him of his clothes and he's laying naked on the ground. But the good news is, a priest comes along. And you're expecting, if you're Jesus' audience, to go, "Oh, good, a religious guy came along, a pastor, a priest. He's going to go and do something, right?" But Jesus goes, so this priest comes along, but when he saw the man, it wasn't like the guy was hidden behind something and the guy didn't see him. He says he saw him, and he made the conscious choice to pass by on the other side of the road. Let's put some distance between me and him. But thankfully, a Levite came along. Levites were the worship leaders in Israel. This was another religious leader for the nation of Israel. And Jesus goes, there's another life-saving opportunity that comes when a Levite comes along. And the audience is like, "Yes, good, this guy's going to help him." But Jesus goes, but he saw the man and he walked by on the other side of the road. And at this point in the story, Jesus's audience would have been aghast at what was going on. Like, "You've got to be kidding me. These two religious leaders of our nation see someone that's one of our own, and they just walk by on the other side," and they've got to be just breathless listening to Jesus tell this story at this point. But it's going to get worse for them, because the next thing Jesus does is he introduces the hero to the story. And the hero in the story, Jesus says, and then a Samaritan came along. And everybody in Jesus' audience would have gone, "Oh no, not a Samaritan." And here's why. Because Samaria was a portion of Israel in the northern part of the kingdom. And when Babylon had conquered Israel, they had taken people, the way that Babylon would do things, they would conquer a nation and they would pull people from that nation and take them to Babylon. They would pull people from other lands they had conquered and bring them to those territories, and they would intersperse people. And so in the area in the northern part of Israel called Samaria, the Babylonians had taken people from other nations and brought them to live among the Jews. And over time, the Jewish people started intermarrying with these people from other nations. And in marriage, you have children. And these children were seen as half-breeds. They were not welcome members of the Jewish race, because the Jewish people prided themselves on staying a pure-blooded race. And so they are Jewish to the core. But for the Samaritans, who are a mixture of Jewish people and people from other nations, and their children are seen as half-breeds, you did not associate with the Samaritans if you were Jews, and you did not associate with the Jews if you were Samaritan. They had to develop their own system of worship, their own place to worship. Everything was about keeping them out, keeping distance between them. In fact, if you remember the story of Jesus meeting a Samaritan woman at the well, he tells his disciples, "We're going to go back down to Jerusalem, but we're going to go through Samaria." And all of the disciples are like, "What? Why? That's crazy. We walk around Samaria. Even if it's uncomfortable for us, even if it adds time to our travel, we go around Samaria to get where we need to go." Jesus goes, "No, no, no. We need to go through Samaria." They would distance themselves like that. In fact, the Jewish people thought, by and large, that every Samaritan was demon-possessed. That's how much they hated them. This is the Hatfields and the McCoys. This is the Montagues and the Capulets. These are bad neighbors. They do not get along. They do not like one another. And when Jesus' audience hears him say, there's a man beaten and robbed and laying for dead on the road naked, and a priest walked by and a Levite walked by, but a Samaritan stops and he helps the guy. Everybody goes, no, that's not how the story's supposed to go. So listen to how Jesus recounts this. A Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. And he went to him, and he bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. By the way, that act of pouring on oil and wine, that's actually a form of worship in the Jewish culture. Those two things are associated with worship most often. And so Jesus is trying to basically say, this act of service that this guy provides is an act of worship to God. And so he goes on. He says he bandaged his wounds, poured on oil and wine, then he put the man on his donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. So I want you to know this morning what it takes to become a servant, what it takes to become a minister of Jesus. As you're growing in your faith, as you're taking next steps to be a disciple of Jesus, one of the places we need to get to in our progression, in our journey of faith, is to learn to minister to others and to look outside of ourselves and see others in need and be willing to move toward them and help them and serve them. And so here's the things that we see. Number one, the Samaritan showed pity for a dying man. So if you're taking notes this morning, just write that down, that he showed pity. This is one of the things that we have to learn to do, is see people in their need and show pity to them, have mercy to them, have compassion to them. In fact, the definition of pity, this will come up on the screen for you to see, is the feeling of sorrow and compassion caused by the suffering and the misfortune of others. Right, so when we see others in their suffering and their misfortune, we're moved with compassion to them. In fact, that word compassion for the Jewish people, the seat of emotions in our culture is the heart. We sing about it, right? I love you with all my heart. We write songs about these things. We have Valentine's Day cards. It's all about the heart. That was not true to the Jewish culture. Do you know what the seat of the emotions was in the Jewish culture? The bowels. That's going to ruin some Valentine songs right there. You do not want a Valentine's card that says, I love you to the depths of my bowels. Like, you just don't want that, right? But in the Jewish culture, that's what it meant. And it meant to be moved to the deepest part of yourself. If you took pity on someone, if you had compassion towards someone, you were moved in that. And it made you do something in response to that movement in your spirit, that movement in the core of who you are. And so here's the second thing that we learned. The guy was not just someone who showed pity, but he was willing to be inconvenienced. Like the other guys in the story, they're not willing to be inconvenienced. They're on their way to Jerusalem. And more than likely, these two priests and Levi that come along, they're moving somewhere to go to lead worship for the Jewish people. They're on their way to Jerusalem, to the temple. And touching a dead body could have caused them to be ceremonially unclean. They couldn't go and do their thing. And so maybe they see the guy and they're pitiful toward him, but they're not willing to do anything to be inconvenienced. So they just pass by. Where the Samaritan, when he comes along, he's willing to be inconvenienced. He's willing to have his travel schedule changed. He's willing to do something that's going to impact him personally. He's willing to be inconvenienced. And so in our lives, as we're learning to be ministers of the gospel of Jesus, are we willing to be inconvenienced? How often are you willing to let the Spirit of God lead you to say, hey, stop what you're doing and go help that person? Get off the path you've created for yourself this morning and go stop and do something for them. Hey, change your course in order to go and move and help somebody else. Are you and I willing to be inconvenienced? Who knows? For the guys that passed by, maybe they thought, you know what, if he got beaten up and robbed, if we stop and help him, what if the robbers are still hiding in the cracks and crevices behind me? What if they come out and do the same thing to me? And so they just pass by. But the Samaritan can minister to this man and serve him because he's willing to let all of his plans be interrupted and his schedule to be thrown off. And then the third thing that he does is what's huge for us to understand. He's willing to get messy. Because if you're going to stop and you're going to help someone who's been beaten and bludgeoned and they're bloody and they're sweaty and they're naked, you're going to get messy in the process. You're going to get your hands dirty. You're going to get your clothes dirty. It's going to cost you. But he's willing to get engaged in the mess of the situation in order to do something to help this guy. He has to get down in the dirt. He's got to get blood and sweat all over him. He bandages his wounds. He pours oil and wine on him. And then he physically takes that body that was beaten so badly that people thought he had been left. He was left for dead. He looked like a corpse. And he picks the guy up and he puts him on his own donkey. And he takes him to an inn. And here's where we find the fourth thing that we need to learn as we're learning to minister. We need to be willing to make sacrifices. This is one of the key things that this guy does. He makes sacrifices. Again, he's traveling somewhere, but he's willing to be interrupted. He spends the night with this guy. He doesn't just take him to an inn and go, hey, all right, now he's your problem. Here you go. Do something about it. He spends the night with the guy. He nurses him back to health. He spends his own money on the guy. The next morning when he gets up and leaves and he goes on his own way again, he goes, listen, here's two denarii. A denarius was about a day's wages for a common laborer. So this is 2 days worth of wages that he leaves with the innkeeper. And he says, this should pay for any expenses you have now. And when I come back, if you have other accumulated expenses, I'll take care of those as well. And so he's willing to sacrifice his own time, his own money for this guy. And there's nothing that the Samaritan does that's for recognition or for reward. Like his motives in all of this are completely pure. There's no 60 Seconds crew showing up and going, hey, we just saw you come in here with a guy and you took care of him overnight. Like, we want to do a story on you and put you in the, you know, the paper tomorrow or the tablets or the scroll or whatever we have to get news out to people. We want to know your story and tell your story. This is an act of sacrifice that this guy does to be inconvenienced, to get messy, and to not have any reward for it at all. In fact, it costs him to do it. And as Jesus tells us, I think we're supposed to be asking ourselves, man, what am I doing to those people around me? What am I doing to love and serve and show pity and compassion? And then Jesus turns back to the lawyer and he asks this question. Now, which of the three men in the story do you think was a neighbor to this man? And I really love how the lawyer answers, because he goes, well, I guess it's the one who showed mercy to him. He doesn't say the Samaritan, because remember, he doesn't like the Samaritans. So he can't even bring himself to say that out loud. Well, the Samaritan guy was. Well, the Republican was. Well, the Democrat was. Well, the guy from California was. Like, whatever context would make you uncomfortable in the story, and that's kind of what Jesus is doing. What if it had been a member of Al-Qaeda who had stopped and helped the guy from our context, in our culture? You wouldn't go, well, the Al-Qaeda guy. You'd go, well, I guess the guy that showed mercy. And that's what the lawyer says. And then Jesus' response to the guy is then go and do likewise. And so here's what this guy's trying to figure out. Who am I supposed to be a neighbor to? Who is my neighbor? And Jesus goes, well, if you're going to live like the Samaritan guy, everybody's your neighbor. Not just the Jewish people, not just the people who are like you, not just other lawyers, not just the people you run in close circles with. Anybody that needs your help, anyone who needs mercy, anyone who needs love, anyone who needs pity, anyone who needs compassion, anyone who needs grace is your neighbor and my neighbor. And so Jesus kind of leaves this guy in this place of saying, now go and do likewise. Go show mercy. Go show pity. Go show compassion. Go show love. Go get messy. Go be inconvenienced. Go offer yourself fully to others without any expectation of reward. And so Christians in the room, if we're listening to this story and we're going, okay, then what's my responsibility? How do I learn from this? Here's what I think we need to understand on your outline is this. Our compassion must be met with action. There are a lot of us who are compassionate toward the plight of others in need and distress. Like, oh my gosh, those poor people. I can't believe that they're having to live like that. I can't believe that happened to them. I'm compassionate toward them. But do we do anything to go meet their needs? Do we do anything to show love, to show grace, to show mercy, to show compassion? We're supposed to be people who see needs and go and meet needs. Not just say, oh, what a pitiful situation. I feel so bad for them. Glad it's not me. Guess I'll just pass by on the other side of the road and stay healthy and stay clean and stay good and I'll just be going my own way. Or are we willing to jump into the fray? Are we willing to get messy? And here's what I love about this, because when we think about this whole story and we think about this guy, this Samaritan, this minister, Jesus is the ultimate servant. Jesus is the ultimate minister. And what we read about this story, we're going to see paralleled in the life of Jesus, that Jesus sees a world broken and in need of help. And he doesn't just go, oh my gosh, what a terrible situation all those humans are in down there on earth, lost in their sins, struggling, dying and going to hell. Too bad for them. God sees us in our need and sends Jesus to be the answer to meet those needs. And so here's what we see in John chapter 15, verse 13. Jesus says this, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for one's friends. Right? And Jesus says this prior to going to the cross, before he's ever nailed to that tree. He goes, listen, the greatest love you can possibly express is to lay down your life for those that you love. In Jesus's case, that looks like literal dying. In our case, it might look like laying down your life financially for somebody else. It might look like laying down your life in a time-constraining way for somebody else. It might look like getting messy on behalf of somebody else. It may be just being inconvenienced totally for somebody else. Lay down your life for your friends. And you go, well, who's my friends? Well, who's my neighbor? Who needs it? Everyone is your neighbor. And just prior to Jesus being arrested and crucified, he tells us about this kind of love, a love that goes to the farthest extent that it can go, is life-changing. And then right before the cross, Jesus has another moment with his disciples that he shares with them. They're at a banquet. They're eating a meal together. And Jesus takes some time away from that meal. John chapter 13, verses 3 through 5, and then we're going to skip to the end of the story and look at verses 12 through 17. It says this, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and he was returning to God. So he got up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing. He wrapped a towel around his waist. And after that, he poured water into a basin and he began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. And you go, well, that's not totally uncommon. Like, we do that. I mean, I've done weddings before where the bride and groom would wash one another's feet as a part of the wedding celebration. Maybe you've had other opportunities where somebody washed your feet before to show you, man, I love you. I want to do an act of grace toward you. But in the Jewish culture, that was something that was reserved for one of the lowest servants in the house. People walked around in sandals or barefoot on dirty roads. And when they would come into a home, the first thing you were supposed to do when you came into a home was have a servant wash your feet so that you could go into the home with clean feet. And at this meal, Jesus disrobes, puts a towel around him, and the master of all masters pours water into a bowl, kneels at the feet of his disciples, his servants, and he washes their feet. And if you read the inner part of the story, Peter actually gets mad at Jesus for doing this. And at first, he doesn't want him to do that. I'll leave that to you to go and read on your own. But here's what we find at the end of the passage, verse 12. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am. But now that I, your Lord and your teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set for you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. All right, church, so listen to this. When Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan, we found that the person who was the neighbor was the one who showed mercy. And then Jesus says, then go and do likewise. Now on the night that Jesus is going to be arrested and taken to trial and crucified, he kneels at his disciples' feet. He washes their feet. Their master washes the feet of his servants. And he says, now that you know this, that a servant isn't greater than his master, if this is how I act toward you as your teacher and your Lord, then you should go and do the same. We're supposed to be people who minister to others. We're not supposed to be people who fight with each other and have disunity around issues of one another. We are supposed to see people in their place of need and sit on our knees and wash their feet. Because that's what Jesus did for us. He's the ultimate servant. He's the ultimate minister. And he calls us to minister just like he did. He calls us into that life of ministry. He says, this is what you're supposed to learn. You go and do the things that I'm doing. Here's the next blank on your outline. Love always moves us to show compassion, and compassion requires that we act in a merciful way. That's what we're supposed to be about. Love is always going to move us to show compassion, and compassion is always going to require that we act in a merciful way. And so I want to close this morning giving us two things that we can be thinking about to encourage you as you grow and as I grow as servants to do ministry where we live, work, and play. So here's the last two things I want to give you. Number one is this. How do we accomplish this? Be aware of needs around you and be willing to look beyond yourself. Have the mentality that there are others with needs all around you. Are you looking outside of yourself to see the needs of others? And what are you willing to do about it? Here's the second thing. Be available to put your life on hold and be inconvenienced to meet the needs of others. Just be available. Start your day saying, God, I don't know what you're going to put in front of me today. I've got plans. I've got an agenda. I've got a schedule. I've got work. I've got family stuff. I've got all these things. And I think I'm supposed to accomplish these things today. But God, I'm available. If you want to auto-correct my course today, then put me on a different path. If you lead me to see someone in need and there's something I can do about it, then let me take that step to meet them where they are. Let me be available today, God. Guide me in availability all day. And I'm putting my yes on the table this morning to say whatever you ask of me, the answer is yes. And I'm willing to step out to be inconvenienced, to get messy, to show pity, to demonstrate the things that Jesus demonstrates, to wash the feet of others, to serve in the most inconvenient ways and in the most humbling ways. And so for us, as we think about that here at Grace Fellowship, we started this summer talking about a principle, a way of living out our faith and doing evangelism that goes beyond cold turkey kinds of evangelism, knocking on doors and asking people, do you know Jesus? Can I tell you about him? Running into somebody at the grocery store and just asking them straight up, man, can I tell you about my faith in Jesus? Like that kind of stuff can be difficult sometimes and weird sometimes, but we've been talking about how do we just ask God to start putting us in positions where we may have opportunities to share the gospel. And so we've implemented this strategy, this idea of principles that guide us called BLESS in an acronym. BLESS stands for begin with prayer, listen, eat with people, serve needs, and share your faith. And so we start just with these first two. Man, what does God want us to do right now? And I think when it comes to learning to be a servant, learning to see people in their needs and meet those needs, we start with those first two ideas. Just begin in prayer. God, show me today where it is that people have need and how I can meet them. And then be willing to listen. People have stories. People have things in their life that are difficult, things that they're going through. Are you willing to just stop and listen And as people share with you where they are in their journey, are you willing to stop what you're doing and help them? And so that's my challenge to us this morning as a church, is learn to serve, learn to minister, learn to see beyond yourself, to pray and ask God to show you how to be available and to show you how to be aware. And then listen for opportunities and look for opportunities to do those things.
Thanks so much for checking out our message today. We hope you are challenged and blessed by it. We want to invite you to come and worship with us in person if you live in the Tri-Cities area. We meet on Sunday mornings at 9 and 10:45 a.m. at One Fellowship Point in Kingsport, Tennessee. You can also get more information about us from our website or our mobile app. Have a great day.